Hello, everyone. I just had to catch a picture of our companion, and I got it. And if I can find a way to post it to you by the end, she's still up there. She's been up there all day, just right outside the window. And every so often, she gives a little hoot, hoot. Just now, when I went to take her picture, I think maybe the sun was in her eyes. So she definitely knew I was there. You know, she turned her head, but her eyes were closed, or seemed closed. I suspect she saw me. I don't know why she's been hoo-hooing through the day, unless it's just to keep us company. All right. Your faces are beautiful. So I took a really short, like 7 minute nap, and I woke up realizing that I wanted to talk about transmission, which was a bit of a surprise. Thinking about, again, about lichen, and and the way I heard a scientist and photographer talking about them as conversation, as agency in the world. And his comment, which I wrote down someplace, was the world as agency, things always in the process of becoming. And, you know, I love some of those old Anglo-Saxon words, and becoming is one of them. We have so many, like, you know, beginning, before, be, you know, beholden. And it's an odd and wonderful prefix. And becoming is both coming to be and having the nature of taking the nature of coming. So it's so related, seems to me so related to our Tathagata, right? Thus come, the nature of becoming. Anyway, so thinking about transmission in the sense of becoming, and like the way the conversation of two beings makes lichen happen, that lichen is really an event, and forests, the intricacy, the unbelievable intricacy of relationships, in forests or anywhere. and then thinking about the Buddha story and the Mujaku story, and you and me, you know, sitting in our particular seats in this particular time, there's a, in the Buddha story, there's a transmission that's largely unspoken and way more subtle and intricate than you might think if you're just focused on this one person and what he accomplished. There's, you know, what did he learn in utero? You know, what did he learn from his mother, Mahamaya? What from his mother's sister, Mahaprajapati, lovingly raising him? What from his wife, Yasodhara, and the birth of his son, witnessing birth? How was that part of his transmission? and the cousin who shot the swan and then became an enemy, apparently, when the boy Siddhartha saved the swan's life. What about the gardens? You know, the garden, the palace gardens, life and death continually happening in those gardens. And what about the four visions? And then those many teachers and companions during his 6 years of wandering and study. What about Chana, his good buddy? And what did he learn from Sujata, who brought milk and rice, who offered him nourishment and a smile, delight? The grass cutter, Satya, who just gave him a bundle of grass to be his zafu. What about from Mara? Didn't he also receive his transmission from Mara? The lessons of that conversation? The tree. And of course, the star. And one story tells that after his enlightenment, before anything else, the Buddha went to see his mother in the heaven where she was. And with urgency, because he just had to tell her what had happened, what he had learned. Mom, guess what? You know. And then Avalokiteshvara served as messenger from her to deliver the our Prajnaparamita Heart Sutra. Well, some kind of transmission that is. And then there begins a long, long supposed line of transmissions. A line? Really? You know, how much actually happens in a line? So sometimes that line, the lineage, we call it, seems like an effort to box transmission, you know, to tame it, make it understandable. But transmission is not tameable. And this is important. And actually, many of the transmission stories illustrate that, illustrate how untamable a thing transmission is. And so this seems critically important, because your transmission stories are numberless. Your transmission events make up our world. It's these transmission events now that are turning the karma of a world. So, looking then at the story of Chiono, a woman of simple birth. This story doesn't even begin with Bukko's transmission, but his transmission too had its flavor. And do you remember the one about Juji's one finger Zen, where he says, I received this one finger Zen from my teacher and I never wore it out for a whole lifetime. You know, what he received went on and became what he could give, you know, through with the co-creation of coming through him. And so likewise for Bukko and I, but the way you taste the flavor of Bukko's transmission is in these interactions of the story that we have with Chiono. But remember, there was also a deer. there was also the forest. There was the stream. There was the bucket. There was the moon. There was the Heart Sutra. And there was that bamboo strip. And before all of that, there was the death of her husband. And in fact, the full transmission, I think, in this story happens a generation later. She gets it rolling, but it's the nun, Nyozen, who takes it, seems to me, all the way out into the world where the transmission goes, with her verse that says, the bucket, the bottom dropped out of the bucket of that nun of simple birth. And so what's the transmission there, right? And so it goes on so many ways. I'm thinking of, I forgot to look up the painter's name, those amazing paintings that Paula Arai put into a book by a Japanese man who just began to write the Heart Sutra into all of his paintings, right? Who really let the Heart Sutra be his brush and painted the large forces of a life and the tiny forces of a life, you know, lightning and babies and neighbors and stones, all engraved with the tiny characters of the Heart Sutra. The stories of women, a community of women in Japan, bringing healing to themselves and to others with their practices together, prayer, song, poetry, together in Japan. Women in the cotton fields in the South, holding each other's babies, singing songs, holding courage for each other through unbelievably hard times. That transmission, that wisdom. And in our town and in our lives, there's a huge wave of transmission coming from so, so many forms of life, from the pets in and around our houses, the millions of extinctions, starving polar bears, one octopus off of Cape Town. Transmission stories abounding. Thinking of Rachel Carson, to how many people did she give transmission? So loss seems often to be the necessary start of this, of our stories of awakening, of our transmission stories. And we're not running short of that commodity at the moment. And so we keep our ears close to the ground to learn lessons from earth. We turn our hearts full of questions to the sky, to the forests, to the waves. And we learn, and we must learn more and more to receive the transmissions of humans of all sorts, the ones we like and the ones we don't like. Did you hear her? Yeah. In and out, way out beyond our comfortable communities. So what are your transmission stories? What teachers do you thank or not so much thank, and how have they shaped your own offerings to this world? We need these stories. We certainly need each other. Also today, part of your story is right here in your response to these stories that we brought in today into the meditation. So I'd like to, in a minute, open conversation to sharing those. What lit up for you? What is lighting up? Where do you find yourself in these stories? And, or what, as you consider the transmission of, for you in this lifetime, what do you notice? So just before I open the conversation, I want to read you a poem. I bet you heard that one. This is by Lynn Ungar. It's called The Path. Life, the saying goes, is a journey, and who could argue with that? We've all experienced the surprising turns, the near impassable swamp, the meadow of flowers that turned out not to be quite so blissful and benign as we first thought, the crest of the hill where the road smoothed out and sloped toward home. Our job, we say, is to remain faithful to the path before us, which is an assumption as common as it is absurd. Really? Look ahead. What do you see? If there is a path marked out in front of you, it was almost certainly laid down for someone else. The path only unfolds behind us, our steps themselves laying down the road. You can look back and see the signposts, the ones you followed and the ones you missed, but there are no markers for what lies ahead. You can tell the story of how you forded the stream or got lost on the shortcut that wasn't, how you trekked your way to courage or a heart, but all that comes after the fact. There is no road ahead. There is only the walking, the tales we weave of our adventures, and the songs we sing to call our companions on. Our friend got so vocal that she called in the resistance. She's getting screamed at out there. Okay, so what about it? It's time to, and we all fit nicely on one screen. So probably though, since we do fill a screen, it might be good to raise your hand. And Kelly, would you please be looking out for people I miss who might have their hands up? Thank you.